Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi there, and welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. You can follow Golf News Net on Twitter at Golf News Net. Find my work at golfnewsnet.com as well on Yahoo Sports and the Devil Ball Golf Blog. It's great to be back here in the D.C. area, our hometown, after a wonderful week in Wisconsin for the PGA Championship. Had a wonderful time in the Sheboygan area. We could talk a little bit about it if you'd like. The debate on where Whistling Straits actually is. The PGA of America and CBS and its broadcast partners tell you it's Kohler, Wisconsin, which is a completely fictional town. It does not exist. It is just Herb Kohler's playland, which is a lot of that part of Wisconsin. But there is some debate about whether Whistling Straits is in Sheboygan, which I don't think that it is, about 10 miles away, really, from Sheboygan. Whether it's in a town called Mosul, which is really more accurate because it's a farming town in which the land really sits, or Haven is the town kind of next to it. That's one that's been used frequently throughout the week. Most folks use Sheboygan. We did at Yahoo Sports. Mosul wasn't used for the most part, except my S, just to throw you off, primarily because folks thought it was a reference to the Iraq war in a town that has been pivotal in the Iraq conflict over the years. So to explain all that is to say, I don't know where the hell I was specifically last week in Wisconsin, but I had a wonderful time, and the outcome is perfect for this season. It just goes to show you where the sport is heading, that Jason Day won this tournament at 20 under par, which is a record score against par in a major championship. Tiger Woods was the only other guy ever to reach 20 under par in a major, did it in the 2000 Open at St. Andrews, didn't finish there, finished at 19 under. Day got to 20, lost and got it back, and finished at 20 with a par at the last. Won by 3 clear of Jordan Spieth, whose stat line for the year in the majors is 1-1 T4-2. That basically matches, albeit in a different order, what Tiger Woods accomplished in 2005. And we'll get into that in a few minutes. You have Justin Rose in there, 14 under. Justin Rose shot 14 under in both the Masters and the PGA Championship, and we looked this up before broadcast today. That score would have outright won every Masters but 9, gotten him into several playoffs at 14 under, and it would have won every stroke play PGA Championship, which is since 1958, except 7. So that tells you how good Justin Rose played and was nowhere near winning either of those championships. And it goes to show you how strong the competition is in our sport right now, where you had a guy win 2 majors and was poised to win a 3rd and a 4th and was just bettered by other players. Guys who now have major championships in Jason Day, and the guy who has a 2nd in Zach Johnson. And it's easy to kind of maybe overinflate this a little bit, the magnitude of the season, the magnitude of what the 2015 majors mean, and maybe even to overinflate what Jordan Spieth's season means in the pantheon of major championship performances. But I think you've got to put the 2015 season up there as one of the best in major championship history, and you can make arguments for other years, I know it, but I think the case for 15 is pretty clear. You had a guy win the first two in very different fashion, dominated the Masters, set the 36, 54, and tied the 72-hole scoring records at the tournament, then goes, after winning by 4 at the Masters, to the U.S. Open. He wins by a shot, basically on a gift, a 72nd hole three putt from Dustin Johnson, where really the tournament was in Spieth's hands with 2 to play, and that double on 17, the 71st hole of the tournament, opened everything up. Otherwise, it could have been a 3 or 4 shot win there too. And then you go to the Open Championship with all the noise surrounding Spieth and his decision not to play in the Scottish Open or to head over to St. Andrews early to prepare to get to know a golf course competitively, never seen in that way. And instead, he wins the John Deere Classic, comes over, and gets 1 shot out of the playoff, which is pretty damn good for having never seen the old course in terms of competition before, especially in a major championship stage. And then, after suffering that heartbreak of not getting into the playoff, not getting a chance to complete the career Grand Slam at Whistling Straits, he again puts himself in position to do it against Jason Day, who plays perfect golf in the final round, basically perfect golf in the final round, to win over Spieth, hold him off by three, and get paid the ultimate compliment in the end by the new world number one, and that is, there is nothing I could have done. What a great compliment. That is, as an athlete, that is what you want to hear. And in sports, typically you get a chance to play defense. You don't get that in golf. Your only defense is good offense. And there was nothing out there for Spieth to accomplish given what he was doing, what he was trying to do, that was ever going to catch Jason Day the way he was playing. When Day hit a 382-yard drive at the par 5 11th in the final round, leaving a wedge into the par 5, that was the moment Spieth said after the fact that he knew this thing was over. He said, holy shit, looked at Day, back at Day, as he and Michael Greller were walking down the fairway, and Day kind of gives a little nod slash wink, gives a little bicep curl and flex, and it's over. That's it. Tiger called it early, I think, with three holes to play. He knew it was done once the par 5 16th was over. There was no way Spieth could really catch Day, barring a disaster, and that wasn't going to happen the way Day was playing. Spieth knew it, too. I mean, he just knew it, too. And I thought that was fascinating golf to watch. And we'll talk about this in a little while, but I do want to touch on the moment when Day won. And someone asked me about it today in a radio interview at a weekly spot I do in New Mexico. And the question really was, he kind of found a little strange. Actually, it wasn't for a New Mexico one. It was for one in Kentucky. I talked about it for New Mexico, but did it more in depth for a Kentucky appearance. So hi to Matt Lawrence and to Steve Bordstein. Thanks for having me on your shows. But my reaction was, it was so strange. It's surreal to watch that in my mind and to have seen it there in person when he won. Because typically when someone wins a major, especially a guy as talented as Day, there's usually this huge outpouring because it could be the first of many. And I didn't get that sense from the crowd at the 18th hole. And it was a good crowd. It almost seemed like because they knew he was tearing up, they knew he was crying before the final putt, they just wanted to let him let it out. And they didn't want to try and cheer him up. They wanted to let him bring it all out. And when he broke down after kind of the basic look at the crowd and the arms stretched wide, and then just put his head in his hands, because that's the culmination of 15, 16 years of really hard work in this game, a partnership with Colin Swatton, his caddy and coach, that has brought them both to new heights, but especially Day, who grew up in a working poor background, lower middle class background in Australia. His mom still was working while he was winning the PGA Championship, because she refuses to take advantage of his wealth, despite the fact that I'm sure he would be more than generous enough to give her plenty of money. And we'll talk about a story that I think exemplifies his generosity later. And he got saved by golf. And Golf Digest ran a series a number of years ago called How Golf Saved My Life. This would fit back into that work to be resurrected. His entire life is thanks to golf. And to have that moment, that validation, that all the hard work, all the heartbreak that you've gone through to get to this point was worth it. Because you got to the pinnacle of the game. You beat the very best in the world right now, when he was playing his best, and it wasn't even close what he had to what you had that day. That's special. That's something that you, as the cliche goes, can't ever be taken away from him. And I think it's also a springboard for Jason Day, who is now ranked third in the world, to become a number one player in the world. He has the power, he has the game, tee to green, to be a dominating figure in the sport. And we talk about Rory McIlroy and the gifts that he has off the tee and the ball-striking capabilities that he has. Jason Day's, his talents are just as good as McIlroy's. And they're both streaky putters. That's the difference, really, between McIlroy and Day and Jordan Spieth. Spieth is not the best ball striker in the world. He's a very good one, but he's not the best. So when he gets flailing in bad positions, like we saw at the Players' Championship, he struggles because even the short game can't save him when you're hitting from the woods. But for Day and for McIlroy, they are much more likely to continue to play well week in and week out if they strike the ball well. If they don't, they don't have putting to save them. They can't get up and down from every which way and do well. Spieth can do that, so he can find himself in contention without his best stuff. McIlroy and Day have a harder time doing that. But when they're at their best, it is better than Jordan Spieth's best. The absolute awesomest those guys can play. Day's is the best, I think. Right now, it is the best. And that tells me that there is still a further ceiling for him to reach, which could be number one in the world. And now we're at this place where Jordan Spieth, who gets the ultimate consolation of becoming a number one player in the world at the age of 22, supplanting McIlroy, who finished in a very respectable 17th place in a start back from the soccer injury. You've got Spieth at one, McIlroy at two, Day at three, and all of those guys are fairly close together. That over the course of the playoffs, if one of those guys separates themselves from the others, that could be our number one player going into 2016, and frankly, well into 2016. But the more likely scenario is that there's going to be some measure of doubt about who the best player in the world is heading into 2016. Just how the numbers belabor it. Rory McIlroy is not going to play in the first leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs at the Barclays. He's going to continue to rest his ankle, continue to recover. It's not a bad decision. It's at Bethpage Black, which is a very difficult walk, a very exacting, trying golf course. So there's not really a good incentive for McIlroy, who's already won a couple times this year, the match play and then at Quail Hollow, for him to put it out there and go play in the first leg of the playoffs. He's pretty much guaranteed a spot in the Tour Championship. I don't even see a scenario, unless it's an absolute freak occurrence, where he doesn't get in. So at this point, he knows he's going to Atlanta. Now he just needs to pick and choose his spots to get ready. Day, who actually I think would do pretty well at Bethpage, should be a factor. And Spieth, who's just playing great golf all around right now, should be a factor as well. So we'll give those guys more chances to establish themselves as world number one over McIlroy, who continues to be somewhat idle as he recovers from this injury. So I'm really excited about where this game is heading. I mean, look at this big three we've got now. And they are not the big three of Nicholas Palmer and Player, because those guys won a lot of majors. They won over 30 majors between them. But if you look at where these guys are at 22, 26, and 27, they have seven majors between them. There's still a long way to go to obviously get in the same stratosphere as the real big three. But that is a pretty strong resume for guys that young. And they're just getting started. Obviously, Day just got started, literally on Sunday. Spieth just got started this year and looks like he's going to be around in this capacity for quite some time to come. And McIlroy can rip off majors practically at will when he's playing good golf. So it wouldn't be all that surprising if we have another year like this one next year, where these three guys are vying for major championships. And then you've got guys who haven't even won them yet that should be in the conversation of this next great crop of players. You got Ricky Fowler, who did not have a very good major championship season this year, but did win the Players, has a couple of worldwide wins this year, including the Scottish Open title. He's moving forward, even if he wasn't as consistent in 2015 in the majors as he was in 2014, becoming the first guy ever to finish top five in all four majors and not win any of them. You've got Hideki Matsuyama, whose Achilles heel is putting. He's not a very good putter at all, but as a ball striker, he is arguably better than both McIlroy and Day, at least in that conversation. You've got Brooks Koepka, who made a furious rally on the weekend at the PGA. Just looking at his scores throughout the course of the weekend, 69, 67, 66. He was 14 under par in the final three rounds. pretty impressive stuff for a guy that is the Phoenix Open winner and, in my mind, the favorite this week heading into the Wyndham Championship, of which he's a part. You've got Dustin Johnson, who I know we malign all the time, and I'm one of those guys that maligns him. But he posts another top 10 in a major championship, a 69 in the final round that included a quad on the first. A quad on the first. Otherwise, he shoots 65 and finishes in third place. Now, that's not to say you should discount quads. They all count the same. But a quad. And he came back from it with two eagles on the back nine. Just incredible stuff from Dustin Johnson. You got Robert Streb, who isn't a young guy, but he's having the season of his life after the season of his life in 2014, doing it again in 15. Tony Finau, who has been a remarkable rookie this year on the PGA Tour, posts another top 10 finish for him. He's strung together so many top 25 finishes this year. It is absurd for a rookie, and he hasn't even pulled through with a win yet. That's coming. Justin Thomas had himself a great weekend, 68 and 70, finishing tied for 18th place. Again, we mentioned McIlroy. Even Russell Henley is still fairly young, came on pretty well to finish in a tie for 12th place. This sport has so many good young names, and that doesn't even count the guys like Patrick Rogers and Maverick McNealy and other guys that are coming. Lee McCoy's coming. More guys are coming as reinforcements to take on these guys. It's just an amazing time for the sport. And if you're not excited about what's happening in the game right now, and I can't surmise that you aren't because you're listening to this podcast, so you're a golf geek like me. But if you're not excited about where we're at as a sport, I cannot help you. We are enjoying a renaissance right now. And so quickly after the Tiger Woods era was officially pronounced dead that it's kind of stunning. And it's wonderful. It's great timing. Really great timing. And, you know, Tiger missed the cut here. It was 4 over, 75-73. He's playing in Wyndham this week. And I keep getting asked the question in radio interviews because it's compulsory to ask me about Tiger. The Tiger era is over. And I think we've got that. We can say RIP to that. And maybe this was the nail in the coffin, or maybe it was Jordan Spieth winning the first two majors, or maybe it was Rory winning the last two majors last year. But that era is over. But we have seen some progress from Woods. He is better than he was when he shot 82 in Phoenix. He is better than he was when he shot 85 at Memorial. And I think the 82 was worse than the 85, by the way. And we've seen some improvement in regular, weaker-fielded PGA Tour events. So if that progress is there, then I think you have to give him a little bit of benefit of the doubt that he is getting somewhere. What the peak is, I don't know. I don't think that peak is as good as Jason Day or Rory McIlroy or Jordan Spieth right now, but it might be good enough to win some PGA Tour events, and it might be good enough to win a major or two. The chase for Jack is over. 19 is done. He will be 40 in December, and it's not happening unless something miraculous unfolds in the next 4 to 5 years. And if it does, I'll review this tape and eat my own hat. But that era is over. And so is the Phil Mickelson era. He was tied for 18th place and had a lovely weekend after a rather uninspiring one over for the first 36 holes. And he feels like he's close. And Mickelson has never really used up the same amount of equity as Woods has, especially in the last few years, trying to convince us all that a win is just around the corner. Mickelson is ever the optimist and is always trying to project a sense that the best is yet to come. It's not. The best has come and the best has gone for Mickelson. But that doesn't mean that at nearly 46 years old, he can't play major championship caliber golf, and he can't play winning golf. Both of those guys can still do it. Will they decline rapidly after where they're at now? Probably. The week-to-week dominance, gone. But these guys still have the experience and enough length to be able to combine with their experience, to their major championship resume, to maybe sneak one in there. And I think most people you would find these days are rooting for Tiger Woods to play well again, including his younger peers. They want to see him finish well. Phil Mickelson still has a lot of people pulling for him because they want to see him win the U.S. Open. I don't think they really care if he wins another golf tournament. So long as it's the U.S. Open, people will be happy. And that leads us to a great set of 2016 major championship venues. Of course, we have Augusta National for the Masters. We have Oakmont for the ninth time for the U.S. Open. Oakmont is such a special place. It's near Arnold Palmer's hometown in La Trobe, within an hour. It's going to be a really special event. And it just typically produces a fascinating result with a great champion. Angel Cabrera will be the guy that defends the title there, so to speak, from last time. Which, that was an astounding finish with the way Cabrera played the 72nd hole at Oakmont, which is no joke. And to play that hole like he did to win and make sure that he won and left Tiger Woods hanging was just, oh, was great golf, great theater. Then you got Royal Troon for the Open Championship. Troon isn't necessarily my favorite course in the world, but it is set amid a fantastic political backdrop as Troon opens up its membership to men and women, and the Troon Women's Golf Union, Ladies Golf Organization, basically becomes part of the presenting committee for this championship for the first time. The RNA clubs are moving toward equality, which sounds really weird to say that the UK and Europe are behind in terms of equality measures, but they are, at this point, way behind the United States, which is pretty kind of funny. And then you have, as your last major championship venue, Baltusrol, which in 2005 held one hell of a PGA championship that finished on Monday with Phil Mickelson getting his one and only Wanamaker trophy. And it's a golf course where typically guys can light it up. And the finish 10 years ago was the antithesis of that, where I think the winning score was, what, 4 or 5 under par. And I don't expect to see that next year for the PGA. I expect to see 12, 13 under par at Baltusrol. But three wonderful, historic major championship venues next year that are the backdrop for what's likely to be a repeat great major championship season. We got really lucky this year. 2014 was salvaged by Rory McIlroy. The first two majors of 2014 were kind of duds, even though they were interesting performances. They weren't especially compelling. All four majors this year were compelling in their own unique way, and we're lucky to have seen it. So I think that's great for the sport. I think I don't know what the final rating is yet. I haven't seen it for the PGA Championship. I assume it's somewhere in the area of 2014's number, which means people are interested in these guys. That's great for the sport. I don't know if it rubs off, and I don't believe that it rubs off into general participation, but it may get more kids interested in the sport. It may get more folks who otherwise wouldn't turn to golf to watch it. That's not bad for the game. You got to commend the PGA of America, who put on a great championship. It really did. I think, and this is not going to be a popular opinion, I think they put on the best major championship of the year. And they do it because they're not so damn serious about it. They, like the British Open with the RNA, they let the course and the weather and the players dictate who wins. They don't let the conditions get tricked up. They don't let the golf course get tricked up. They don't do anything really strange to the golf course. They don't make the greens too fast or kill them off or anything like that. But they let the golf course speak for itself. And the golf course got walloped last week. 20 under par to win a major is a pretty big deal. Now, as a 7,400-yard golf course, that leads me to believe that 7,400 yards isn't enough for these guys. Not this Pete Dye design, where most of the trouble, frankly, lies around 300 yards. If they were going to remodel this course, they would put a lot more trouble in the 350 zone than the 300 zone. Because guys would just lay up to about 300 and then hit, rather than blasting over it and inviting drives of 320, 330, 382, 400 yards. Bubba Watson hit a drive 398 that ran through the green in the final round. You can see that on our website, by the way, golfnewsnet.com. And that's technology for you. That's where we are with technology and the strength of these players, that they can generate the club head speed that rivals that of a long driver. Long drivers would probably hit it a little bit further, but not that much further, but way less accurately than these guys did, Day, Watson, Dustin Johnson, some others, at the PGA Championship. And they do it fearlessly, as Spieth mentioned after the fact. Fearlessly. Day kept pulling driver again and again and again. Even with a big lead, still driver. And Spieth kept saying, well, maybe this will give me a chance. Maybe this gives me hope. Maybe he pulls it, maybe he hits it poorly. Maybe he opens up double, and now game one. And time and again, Day would just obliterate the golf ball. Dead straight, where it needs to go, good drive, keep walking. And I don't know how I feel about that. In one sense, I love seeing that kind of great power golf. In another sense, I don't want to see golf courses like Whistling Straits embarrassed by the birdie fest and eagle fest that it was. And part of that was the conditions were perfect. The weather was never really a factor except for the Thursday afternoon session. Other than that, guys had pretty much carte blanche the scores they needed. They're able to hit it over all the trouble, and the course was fair enough so that it wouldn't just put balls into the rough just for the sake of making you hit from the rough. So the venue was great. There's nothing wrong with it as a golf course, but it's easily overpowered. And if the PGA of America wants to do something about that within the next 10 years before the PGA Championship comes back, I highly recommend that they lengthen the golf course or they move the bunkering. Because otherwise, and I know there's like 1,000 bunkers, but move real bunkers into more trouble. Pinch some fairways. Otherwise, Pete Dye's visually intimidating test isn't intimidating. It's not to these guys. They give Pete Dye a lot of credit for his design, but they also crush it with the golf ball over pretty much all of the trouble. So I think that Pete Dye's golf courses can continue to host majors, and they're going to keep hosting PGAs here, and Kiowa gets another crack at it in 21, so we're going to see that again. But Pete Dye courses pretty much rely on the weather to have any kind of defense against guys of this kind of power. Does that mean we should roll back the golf ball? I think so. Will it ever happen? No, probably not. I don't foresee a scenario, unless the Masters is the first and only, maybe, to do this, to create a tournament ball for professionals or a certain box within which manufacturers need to play to create tournament golf balls. But unless that happens, we're going to continue to see scenarios like this. And in 2 years, when Wisconsin again hosts a major, this time the 2017 U.S. Open in Erin Hills, we're going to see Erin Hills play as an almost 8,000-yard golf course. I played it during the week at 7,300 yards or so, and it didn't play all that long. And I do not hit it nearly as far as the guys as you see on TV. I hit it pretty far, but not that far. And it wasn't that long of a golf course to me. Some shots were longer than others, but by and large, I was hitting mid-irons into every hole. It's not bad. And if that's the case for me, then yeah, this golf course needs to play at 7,900 yards for the professionals. And they're not going to trick it up. They're not going to make the fairways pinched in. If you miss the fairways by about 3-4 yards, you're kind of dead anyway in wispy stuff. It's going to speak for itself. And we're going to see something kind of akin to what Chambers Bay would look like with some rough, and how it would have looked had they blended bent grass greens and bent grass tees with fescue fairway and everywhere else. I think you're really going to love Erin Hills, but it's going to seem really daunting as a lengthy golf course. Was that necessary? Yes, because of modern equipment, it is. And I believe in bifurcation of the rules of golf. I believe that professionals should have a more difficult time hitting the ball 400 yards than we do 300. And I think that it should be a true test at 7,300 yards for any championship golf course, because that opens the possibilities of so many great golf courses hosting majors. Now with technology, now with the advances that are out there, it rules so many out. And that's why Chambers Bay got a major. That's why Erin Hills got a major. That's why Los Angeles Country Club is getting a major. That's why Trump National is getting a major. Because they're modern golf courses or recently renovated ones that are long enough and large enough to handle the modern professional at a minimum of 7,500, if not 8,000 yards. That day is coming when we play a major at 8,000, and it might be in 2 years at Erin Hills. And if that's the case, that's a sad moment for the sport because it tells us that our game's governing bodies weren't willing to step in and stop golf courses, great ones, from being irrelevant to major championships. And if that continues to happen, then I think we are hurting the sport by not exposing people to better tracks than the ones we're going to see in the major championship lineup. And those are really, really good golf courses. I loved Erin Hills a lot, but there are better courses out there. And those ones still deserve a turn in the majors, and I know new ones do too. But they cannot just be decisions solely based on their ability to beat technology, because technology can be beaten back. So I'd love to see where the sport heads. I can't wait for the future. I can't wait for next season, major championship season. We're less than 8 months away from the Masters, and you've got to be excited for that. Until next week on the show, we'll talk about Tiger Woods and the Wyndham Championship. We'll talk about the bubble for the FedEx Cup playoffs. Get you excited for the Barclays, which will be at Bethpage Black this year for the first time as this championship. And we'll talk a little bit more about what happened at the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. Until next week, I'm Ryan Balanchine saying thanks so much for your support. Thanks for listening to our show. And we'll see you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.